Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are in the throes of going through the Constitution. And why? Because it is Constitution Week. Yesterday was Constitution Day. And I think one way they tried to seem like they were aggrandizing the occasion, actually, but marginalizing it, was making it Constitution Week. I do get it, but I don't get it because I don't understand why we don't... I'm not a fan of paid holidays at all. That what that means is the government is mandating paid non-productivity. So I do not subscribe to that thought. But I do believe that as a nation and as 50 sovereign states, we should be celebrating and commemorating Constitution Day. It shouldn't be just a thing that just, when was it? That was yesterday. Okay. I don't know. I just have a different perspective of this because I recognize that it has, you know, our Constitution was duplicated by almost every South American, Latin American, Central American nation, as well as other nations around the world, and they tried to implement this form of government. And almost all of them failed. Actually, none of them succeeded totally, and they all ended up falling by the wayside because they didn't understand the concepts of, one, American republicanism. They didn't understand because I think they just lacked the entitlements, or not the entitlement, the enlightenment. Entitlement. Everybody has plenty of entitlements today because of socialism, but that's off the topic. This show is sponsored by, or also sponsored by, ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is the only show that will give you the academic-based and evidence-based solutions in what we need to do if we are going to save our Constitution. I will just quickly remind you that if you cannot listen to these shows, or if you can't listen to Red State Talk Radio and your favorite shows on Red State Talk Radio, we have a listen line. It's 605-562-4209. Now, we are going to grovel just real quick, and then I'm going to dive into, because I'd like to get further through the Constitution, see if we can do this in maybe 3 days, so that we can have some deeper discussions. But I do not want to not editorialize. And more importantly, I know that the language is really hard for people to get and try to explain, because sometimes it seems like a double negative, like they shall not and shall not be... living in that state for 1 year. I'll try to explain these things. If I miss them, then just let me know, or go through them by yourself, and that's even better. Then you can start understanding that it's just an archaic use of the English language, or I should say, unfortunately, we've evolved into simplifying and dumbing down our language to where many of the words that they used back then we don't even understand today because they're just not in our form of speech or vernacular or what have you. So anyway, we have a Red State Coffee that is a sponsor. We would love for you to try Red State Coffee because that's one way you can support us. And then tell us what you think. We have a comment line, 425-270-5416. Get comments every once in a while. As a matter of fact, I usually get a few comments each week. But what I would like to have is your comments on what you think about Red State Coffee. So why don't you please let us know by calling 425-270-5416. Once you've tried it for yourself, please let us know. Now, yesterday, we made it into Section 5, and we got through the very first paragraph of Section 5, and now we are in section, the second paragraph of section 5 heading into section 6. And you do know section 8, I've mentioned this before, most people that understand the Constitution, section 8 is where the enumerated powers are. So we'll go through those. But let us start examining more on section 5 for right now. And let's work our way through this. And in the Constitution, it actually stipulates in this paragraph that each house is to create a journal and publish these. Now, let me ask you this. As we just start off on this concept, and it says this very specifically, quote, each house shall keep a journal of its proceedings and from time to time publish the same, excepting such parts as may be in their judgment require secrecy, and the yeas and nays of the members of either house on any question shall, at the desire of one-fifth of those present, be entered into the journal. Now, here's my problem, that we have this requirement that our houses require this journaling and publication. Why is it that the bureaucracies, the department, the legitimate bureaucracies, such as the Department of Defense, or Department of War at the time, the Department of State, as well as the Treasury, why is it that they do not have journals for whenever they have meetings and keep track of everything that they're doing and publish these things so that we can go through them? Why? Well, because the less they have to publish, the less they get disclosed. And as a matter of fact, if you didn't notice how the State Department started backpedaling all of the crap that Hillary was doing and how they were doing spin control for her during the 2016 election, constantly covering for her, well, then you can understand. Had we had transparency and the access to all of this information, they would not have been able to even think that they could get away with doing the crap that they did. Going back into the Constitution, neither house, this is the last paragraph of Section 5, neither house during the session of Congress shall, without the consent of the other, adjourn for more than 3 days, nor at any other place than that in which the two houses shall be sitting. The senators and representatives shall receive a compensation for their services, this is Section 6, to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. They shall, in all cases except treason, felony, and a breach of the peace, be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their representative houses and in going to and returning from the same. And for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place. What this just said is that barring treason, felony, and or breach of the peace. So I'll just read it very specifically. Quote, they shall in all cases except treason, felony, and breach of the peace be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their respective houses. So what does that mean? That means that they're above the law? Yep. For the most part, they can go as fast as they want to get speeding tickets or won't get speeding tickets because they can't be arrested. Now, it doesn't mean that that speeding ticket can't be processed. And then when they're not in session, then you can have them, then we can have them actually face their judgment by basically having them dragged into court for being ticketed or what have you, but they cannot be arrested. Now, here's the thing. If you understand that treason is one of those things that can pull them out of session, as I've been telling you, when states start charging these folks with treason, then they're going to start waking up and recognizing, we can't do anything we want. You mean we can't do things that are not constitutional? It's not okay to violate the Constitution. Are you kidding me? Why can't we violate the Constitution? Why can't we do what we want to do? Everybody else has been doing it, And that almost sounds like that old childish argument. Well, everybody else did it. Anyway, we have to start asserting and demanding compliance to the Constitution. I'm not trying to say that they need to be or shouldn't be above the law. I understand the importance of what our sovereigns do, but I also understand the importance of them complying to the actual supreme law of the land. And so this is where state attorney generals, we need to start calling them out. And actually, if you understand Section 3, which we've gone through this, and maybe that's what we'll go through next, is some of these amendments that are very critical in the process of oversight and constraining the federal government within the boundaries of the Constitution. We should go through these things, and we will. We'll go through them so that you understand that the states actually have the ability to pull back their representatives and their senators and force them to comply to the Constitution. Now, I could easily go into some examples, but what I want to do is I want to focus on the Constitution. So no senator, this is back to the last paragraph of Section 6, no senator or representative shall during the time for which he was elected be appointed to any civil office under the authority of the United States. So anyway, it's kind of like having a double role and giving themselves extra pay. We will be right back right after these two promos. So please stay tuned, and we'll be wrapping up Section 6 when we come back. Thank you so much.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so Section 6, we just started when we were going into the break. So let's repeat this first sentence. The senators and representatives shall receive a compensation for their services. We can't deny them that. And as a matter of fact, as far as I'm concerned, they're probably underpaid somewhat. They should have a standard compensation package, just like corporate America. They shouldn't be leading in the elitist society that grants themselves privileges in investments and so forth, where they have a position where they can literally make investments and not be held accountable. In other words, they shouldn't be able to do insider trading, which they do all the time, and they hold other people, Martha Stewart and a lot of other people, accountable for these little nuances of insider trading when they are blatantly doing insider trading. So they shouldn't be able to do those types of things. They should not be above the law. And as a matter of fact, I proved to you that during the ratification debates in Massachusetts, they were to be held to the same standard as everybody, that they would not be allowed to make themselves above the law. And they have done that. Of course, anybody, if you give them enough rope, they will do what's necessary to hang themselves, because they will go out that far. But they have done everything they could to protect themselves so they couldn't be held accountable. But anyway, so they should receive a compensation for their services to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. Now, does it say anything about retirement? No, only that they should receive compensation. I have no problem with them deserving and or getting a retirement, but it should not be anything greater than what is being given to those. As a matter of fact, it should be less than their compensation, or I should say the retirement compensation, should be less than what the military receives. Because the military just doesn't go around and push papers and write laws and that type of thing. Those people in the military are actually putting their lives on the line. And so I think with the higher the risk, right? It's just like with investments, the higher the risk, the better the pay. I think the people that should have the best retirement in government should be those who serve, who put themselves at risk. And as a matter of fact, I honestly believe that a flat or a standard retirement, because it's almost Marxist to think that the cook in the military deserves the same kind of retirement because he's taking the same kind of risk. Now, maybe in the Marine Corps, but he's really not taking, he or she is not taking the same kind of risk as the infantryman, the person that's actually going into battle, the person that's pulling the trigger, throwing grenades and engaging in combat. Their retirement should be the best. It should be tiered. And it should be based on the risks you are taking. If you are thrown into the military and by the good of the service, because remember, once you're in the military, they can do whatever they want. You have given up your ability and freedom for the good of the service of the country, for the good of the Corps, what have you. And so I believe that those who are putting place at high-risk positions, they should be getting a better compensation or at least a better retirement, period. And so I have a problem with these golden parachutes that every single congressman is getting. And as a matter of fact, they should be paying into this. And actually, they should be getting the Social Security that everybody else gets. Again, Massachusetts set that bar that they could not put themselves above anything else. And so moving on, let me see here. They shall all, in all cases, so paid out of the Treasury of the United States, they shall in all cases except treason, felony, breach of peace, be privileged from arrest during the attendance of the session. And we already went through this. No senator or representative shall, during the time for which he was elected, he or she, be appointed to any civil office under the authority of the United States, which shall have been created, or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased during such time, and no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either house during his continuance in office. So, in other words, they're making it. And as a matter of fact, this was a contention for Henry, because Henry said, well, okay, you've created this barrier for having duplicity, or not duplicity, having a duplicative opportunity of reaching into the public purse for extra pay. And they wanted at the state level to make sure that nobody could do this at the state as well. So not just at a, in a federal job, if you are working as a representative, you cannot be working in the state with a different role or a different type of public service or what have you. You either did one or the other. Moving on to Section 7, all bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives, but the Senate may propose or concur with amendments as on that bill. Now, this is being violated, by the way. And so this is one of those things that we're finding that the Senate, and as a matter of fact, a lot of the bills that are being presented in both houses are coming from bureaucrats. If you've ever seen The Swamp, I don't believe I've actually put that up, but if you ever watched this video, I think it was done by MRTV or Mark Levin TV or whatever, CRTV. If you watch this, they actually show how bills come up and how lawmakers handle these things. It's just, it's amazing what they're doing and how they have perverted our system. Again, there was a reason why all bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives, because these are the people that represent the people, the sovereigns, the ultimate sovereigns. And so the ultimate sovereigns could be strapped with this debt. They wanted to make sure that all bills originating revenue, in other words, we're going to be placing taxes upon you people. Well, then those people have to defend themselves every 2 years. And this is how the ultimate sovereigns have the ability to purge their ranks from bad representatives who are putting too much of a burden on them. They knew that if they put them in the Senate, you know, 6 years is a long time to try to remember, oh, they put this stupid tax on this. So anyway, they wanted to make sure that these people, these representatives in the House of Representatives, were more accountable to the people by giving them their very specific powers. It's the same thing with declaring war has to be done in the House. The Congress has to declare war, but it primarily originates in the House. And why? Because then they're accountable to the people. And we'll get into that down the road here. But the Senate may propose or concur with amendments, not actually originating bills, but amendments as on other bills. Every bill which shall have passed the House of Representatives and the Senate shall, before it become a law, be presented to the United States. This is where the president has the responsibility to make sure that this bill that is being passed is constitutional, which is why James Madison vetoed the bill that was granting the Department of Transportation. James Monroe vetoed the same type of bill that would have created the Department of Transportation in 1822. And I'd like to say this is why, but President Andrew Jackson even vetoed a bill because, you know, he had some problems with creating a Department of Transportation. Moving on, if he, the president, approves, he shall sign it. But if not, he shall return it with his objections to that house in which it shall have originated, who shall enter the objection at large on their journal and proceed to reconsider it. If, after such reconsideration, 2/3 of that house shall agree to pass the bill, it shall be sent, together with objections to the other house, by which it shall likewise be reconsidered. And if approved by 2/3 of that house, it shall become law. So this is how laws can be bypassed over the veto process. So let's walk through this. If Congress submitted a bill that would violate the Constitution and the president vetoed it like Monroe and said, you do not have these powers, like Madison, these are clearly not delegated powers. You cannot do this. And Congress decides with overwhelming 2/3 votes in both houses choose to pass this bill. Then what happens? Well, if you understand, and we'll get into this, the Supreme Court does not have a proactive role and responsibility. So what has to happen is the states have to then step in and say, you have violated our contract. And this is where Republic Review would come in. And Republic Review would say, look, this is not a law that is in pursuant with any of the powers granted you in creating this Department of Transportation. This has been the lost theory of our of our federalism and our government and our republicanism. And it is absolutely lost because, for one reason, we have the 17th Amendment, which has taken away the state's ability to intervene in these types of things. So we're going into a break, so we'll be back after these two promos. Please stay by, and we will get into this in more detail.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So before I jump or continue on, I do want to jump ahead. Because if you understand the constraints on the judiciary did not have an active role. In other words, it wasn't their job to run back and forth between the legislative branch and the executive branch and say, what are you doing? Okay, let's take a look at this. Everything had to go through the judiciary. No, not at all. And as a matter of fact, when we get into that, you will read that these things in cases, they have to be brought forward in a case. They nowhere in here does the Supreme Court have the power to create the case. In other words, it is not their jobs to be the prosecutors of the other houses. It is their job to ensure that they're the guardians of the Constitution so that when a case comes forward, and as long as they have jurisdiction, then they can step in and say, this is a violation of the Constitution. More importantly, nowhere in the Constitution does it give allowance to the Supreme Court to create opinions which then create the pathway of law In other words, this is how they've been legislating, because bottom line, they're supposed to rule whether it's constitutional, whether it's not constitutional. Now, they may need to elucidate, they may need to clarify whether the details of the ruling and as to why, but providing opinions has been how they've basically been pushing and pointing our federal government, the general government, in a direction that has been violating the Constitution. Because when John Marshall said that the federal government is supreme in all things and they can do anything they deem necessary and proper, well, then we have a problem, folks, because that is nowhere in the Constitution. They do not have this ability to do anything necessary and proper. They only have the ability to pass laws that are, and we're going to get into this in Section 8, so when we read this, I'll highlight this, but those laws have to be tied directly to the enumerated powers. In other words, education is not one of them. They're laws that is tied to any enumerated power. Anyway, moving on. But in all such cases, so in other words, if it passed by two-thirds of both houses after the president has vetoed it, then it goes through this this reconsideration or appeal, and they can pass this law. So Congress can actually pass unconstitutional laws. Just wanted to let you know that. They can do that. So whose responsibility is it to make sure that the laws Congress is passing is constitutional? It is the states, which is precisely why Madison and Jefferson in 1798 stepped up and said, hey, these Alien and Sedition Acts are violations of the Constitution. You can't do this. And instead of going into court, they pursued the stakeholders, the owners of the Constitution, the states, the sovereigns over the Constitution, to coalesce, to come together, unite, and force the federal government into compliance. As you start looking at these concepts, then this actually helps peel back this curtain and go, hey, this is precisely what Republic Review does. So moving on, but in all such cases, the votes of both House, now listen to this, but in all cases, the votes of both houses shall be determined by yeas and nays, and the names of the persons voting for and against the bill shall be entered onto the journal of each house respectively, period. There is nowhere in here where that is to be done in secret. It is one thing for them to have, you know, closed doors for national security conversations. But when it comes to voting on any bill, regardless of what its intent is, there has to be full transparency on who voted for what. If any bill shall not be returned by the president within 10 days, in other words, let's say Congress passes a bill and it barely passes by 50%, by basic majority in both houses, and it is not returned by the president within 10 days, and it's a really crappy bill, then it actually becomes law. And it says here, Sundays accepted, after it shall have been presented to him, the same shall be a law in like manner as if he had signed it, unless the Congress, by their adjournment, prevent its return, in which case it shall not be law. So in other words, let's say they pass this law, and they leave, and the president actually vetoes it or what have you, but he can't return it to them. So for reconsideration, in other words, the framers made it so that inaction by the president cannot stop a bill from becoming law, and that Congress can't just do the shenanigans of leaving or going to adjourning from the session for a few days, having a recess, and then it becoming law because they were unable to receive his rejection. Every order, resolution, or vote to which the concurrence of the Senate and House of Representatives may be necessary, except on a question of adjournment, shall be presented to the President of the United States, and before the same shall take effect, shall be approved by him or being disapproved by him shall be repassed by 2/3 of the Senate and House of Representatives according to the rules and limitations prescribed in the case of a bill. Okay, so bottom line is that everything that is going out, whether it be order, resolution, or vote, to which the concurrence of both houses are on board with this, it may be necessary, except on a question of adjournment. So the whole point of this is that if they want to adjourn for a recess, that doesn't have to go to the president. But everything else needs to go to the president. And before the same shall take effect. I guess there are rudimentary other procedures that the House may do and what have you that does not have to go. But this is talking about very specifically orders, resolutions, bills, laws, and so forth. Now, moving into Section 8. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes. Now, to be very clear, I'm going to actually go to Section 8 because the way it's presented in this bill, it is not kind of laid out as it does in Avalon. So when you go to Avalon, and it's the Avalon Project, and if you know what the Avalon Project is, this is actually hosted by the Yale Law School. Now, I'm going to tell you that they have inaccuracies in the Avalon Project, but the one thing I do like is the fact that they have this this ability to, you know, go to the sections, and they break this one particular section down. So the top of Section 8 in the Avalon Project basically has these five words: the Congress shall have the power. And then they lay out these enumerated powers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. These things are not laid out by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the Constitution. So when I say subsection 3, if you go look for it, you actually have to read what is the third paragraph or subparagraph underneath Section 8. So the very first thing that is considered the preamble is Section 1 or subsection 1. And so the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes. But I do like the way Avalon laid it out, because every line starts off with two: to borrow money, to lay taxes. But so just to be clear, the first subsection, one, is a preamble, which kind of lays out that we're going to give Congress the power in these general senses for this purpose, and now we're going to enumerate the details of what that general sense means. And this is what Madison explained, and you've heard this, as a matter of fact, a couple of times from the framers, from Madison and even Monroe, and I believe even Jackson, when they started saying, hey, we do not have general powers, we have enumerated powers, and they're listed after that preamble. So you have to go back and go, where do we have the authority delegated to us from the states to be able to create a Department of Transportation? So anyway, the Congress shall have the power, one, to collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. In other words, everything that they do, they have to have it applied fairly and evenly to each of the states. Period. There's no wiggle room. So anything and everything the federal government does, they have to treat each of the states in the exact same manner. Now, I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to kind of give you this, because I've said this a few times, that the interpretations, actually, this is too long, it'll be too much, but it'll be worth holding on to. So please stay tuned, and I'm going to explain the uniformity and the ratification debates as soon as we get back. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so as we're going into the break, I wanted to explain the ratification debates and how, because if you understand, the ratification debates were not just votes. These were clarifications. These were terms of how they defined the contract, how the contract was to be executed. And so when one state stipulated that this is how this is to be, such as Massachusetts, to say they are not above the law, they will be held to the same standards and oppressed by the same laws that they oppress their own people. Those definitions cannot be just applied to those representatives coming from the state and the people of Massachusetts. Right here, everything shall be uniform throughout the United States. All duties, imposts, and excises. Now, even though these are defined as taxes and burdens, it is the same when all of a sudden you start creating a burden on the people, but you don't put that burden on yourself, or you put burdens on one particular state, or you put benefits on one particular state. You have to do them evenly. So you cannot create a definition and have it only apply to, let's say, Texas came into the Union with the ability to secede from the Union. No. Every single state came into the Union with the ability to secede. That was even clarified by Madison, and I believe it was Federalist Paper 45 or 46, somewhere in there. I could look it up, but I'm not going to. Just to be clear, every state has, in their ratification debates, uniformly applied definitions so that as Madison or Wilson in Pennsylvania explain this is what this means, then it applies throughout the republic. And here's the beautiful thing about the ratification debates. They are harmonious. Not one state came out and said, hey, we're going to give this federal government this power, or we're going to give them this constitution, and they're going to be allowed to ignore it and assume general powers and be able to assume any type of power that they want to. You will not find that type of dialogue anywhere. As a matter of fact, you find a consistency and a harmonic resonance from every single state's ratification debates that the federal government is constrained by the enumerated powers, that the only way they can exercise any new type of power is by amending the Constitution so that the states can delegate that said power. Okay? So I'm telling you this because the uniformity clause is egregiously violated all the time. When the federal government has subsidies for states, for markets such as agriculture, or for corporations and banks like for New York, and I tell you these things all the time, there are states that are not getting a uniform distribution of benefits, but bottom line is they shouldn't be getting those because all of those are unconstitutional. So what ends up happening is certain states are getting a better deal and better subsidies than many states are getting altogether. And that's not how the federal government or our general government is to behave. The Constitution is clear that they have to be uniform throughout the United States in everything they do. So the next subsection two, is to borrow money on the credit of the United States. So they have the ability to borrow money. Well, what would they need to borrow money for? They can only borrow money for the enumerated power. So let's say education, which is not an enumerated power. They do not have the ability to borrow money to pay for education, period. They can't even tax people for education, and they can't pay for education. Even if they had surplus money, they cannot pay for it. They can only do and write checks for the things that they have been delegated the ability to do that. In other words, you've created this little accountant, you know, to work for your company, and he just can't write checks to give himself money and all these other friends of his money. He can only write checks to these creditors or to these very specific entities to do very specific things and only those things. If not, then what he is doing is extorting money and fraud and committing all different types of laws, and that's what the federal government's been doing. They've been breaking and violating the Constitution, the highest and most supreme law of the land. So what's it going to take, folks? What is it going to take to get you to start demanding full compliance, to demand that your state steps up and protects us from all of this federal tyranny? They're running us into ruin. They're going to bankrupt us. They're giving us oppressive laws, constraining our liberties. They're constraining our states from being able to tap the resources that the states could actually become solvent and independent once again, because they are constitutionally independent sovereignties. Anyway, the next enumerated power: to regulate commerce with foreign nations. Doesn't say to regulate commerce with amongst the states, but it does say and among the several states and the Indian tribes. So in other words, they're granted this ability to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states. So what they're talking about, this is not actually the control of all commerce. This is to ensure that how the states and foreign nations and Indian tribes interdeal in exchanging commerce, they're supposed to regulate that. They're not supposed to regulate the in nuances. Do they regulate commerce with foreign nations? In other words, go in and tell them they have to do it this way. They have to make cars this way or that way. No, they are to only ensure that how they deal with, the United States deals with foreign nations and trades with the several states as well as with the tribes. They have to make sure that there is no shenanigans when it comes to commerce amongst the states, where states that have ports or have throughputs, like southern states that maybe be able to bring in goods cheaper into their states, like Texas, California, and so forth, because they can get cheaper products, and then adding a tax onto that so that the other states have to pay them. the whole point in regulating the flow of commerce amongst the states as well as the foreign nations, as well as with the Indian tribes, is to ensure that they have an even and uniform distribution of how this process is to work. That states, because of their unique nature in their placement in the republic, does not give them a pathway to become oppressive to their sibling states. Here's another one. To establish, this is huge because this is being violated so egregiously that it has been the Trump campaign of 2016 and probably 2020. To establish a uniform rule of naturalization, to establish it, and uniform laws on the subjects of bankruptcies throughout the United States. So in other words, they're supposed to make sure that we have a unified and uniform application of how people become citizens. And so we do not have that. Nowhere in there does it say, hey, anybody, we have an open border policy. We actually have laws that they've passed that say you have to come through. And so there are people that are constantly violating the laws. And Congress has failed to ensure that these laws are being enforced. And in Article 4, Section 4, they are bound to protect us from invasions. And they are not. They are not only allowing the Constitution to be violated, they are actually out there supporting the violation, giving aid and comfort by creating these aid stations, by, you know, giving them access to this nation while they're going through due process when they do not deserve, because they are not subject to our laws. They are subject to another nation. And so it is very clear, even in the 14th Amendment, that due process is not guaranteed to all human beings in the world. It is only guaranteed to American citizens, not just people that get here. The Supreme Court has gone way beyond the interpretation of due process or the individual privileges and immunities. Those are only granted to U.S. citizens. But moving on, to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures. Okay, so they're supposed to coin money and or print money or what have you, and regulate the value thereof. What that means is they're to make sure that they don't put too much money into circulation or constrain money from being in circulation. But it does not say anywhere in here where they regulate our economy, where they regulate bank interest rates. They are just supposed to make sure, because the framers understood what inflation was. The more money in circulation, then you basically watered down your currency, which is what the Chinese have been doing. Lots of countries do this. They water down, and this is how they steal the wealth of their people and how they play their economy against other economies. With that, we're halfway through, or just actually starting, Section 8, the Enumerated Powers. We'll get into this tomorrow. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.